Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
It's not about me, I'm only here for a minute, and I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello and welcome to the latest Laz and Powers podcast. This podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at directtv.com. I am Mark Lazarus of The Athletic. I am joined by Scott Powers, also of The Athletic. He just drove in from Columbus. How was that drive, Scott?
I decided to leave after the game, so I don't know how often I want to do that, but I did make it home and was able to wake up and help the kids. And actually, when I walked in the door, the baby was up and greeting me at 4 a.m. and wanted to be about. So we had an interesting morning.
I used to have to do that all the time.
I'm going to take a nap after this podcast.
Back when I was at the Post Tribune covering Valparaiso University basketball, like, you know, I couldn't get trips approved. They would never let me go on a plane anywhere. So like when Valpo would be playing Cleveland State or Wright State in Ohio or, you know, Milwaukee, Green Bay, wherever. One time actually Ohio State in Columbus, I'd always have to drive there and drive immediately back that night because I wasn't allowed to stay at a hotel room. And now I have 1,300 career hotel nights 10 years later. So it's funny how things change.
Nice. Yeah, I listened to a lot of podcasts and books on tape and had some phone calls. And yeah, it was like, in some ways it was nice. Like, but yeah, driving at 3 or 4.
Are you a book on tape guy? It's weird. Like, because I'm a big podcast guy. Like, in the last couple of years, I've become a big podcast guy. I listen to them all the time. Hardly listen to music anymore. I'm always listening to podcasts. But I can't do a book on tape. For some reason, I can't focus. Like, my mind wanders too much, which is fine during a podcast, but I feel like I'm almost like disrespecting the author if my mind is wandering in a book on tape. I'll miss something.
I had some Audible credits, and then I just forgot to cancel it. So I had to, you know, like I wanted to cancel, but you had to use the credits before. So I ended up just buying a bunch of different books, and I have like 6 downloaded, and I feel like I'm all within like an hour of each. You know, like I kind of like, oh, that's
oh my
enough.
God, you're listening to 6 different books at once? I could not.
Well,
do that.
No, not at once. It's just like I bought it, and so they just stay there. You know, like I kind of give up on it after a while. So I'll go back to it a little bit, and I was listening to a couple. I got a couple soccer autobiographies and some soccer managers and yeah, some different things, but yeah, it was good in some ways, but yeah, driving 3 or 4 a.m. I wasn't I was a little bit tired on the way home, but
yeah, I mean, that's a solid 4.5-hour drive for me, and I live in Indiana, so that's an even bigger schlep for you.
Yeah, and you know, the trip was it was worth it, and obviously we want to be on the road at all times, but it was a little deflating, I think, for everyone, especially in Columbus, that there was such an anticipation of Seth Jones's return. And and it was odd, you know, watching the morning skate. Like, you know, you're watching it and you're sort of paying attention. Like, there's a lot of players on the ice, and I just happened to be watching a defenseman, and I heard someone get called over from the bench. You know, like, oh, come here. And DeHaan actually skated over there first, and they're like, no, it's not you. And they yelled for Seth Jones, and Seth Jones went over there, and then he left the ice. And like, oh, that's kind of weird, you know. Like, mm-hmm. they were still like, it was like toward the end of practice, so. And then he didn't talk to the media, and then you started adding it up, and apparently he tested positive, and then they got the second test back later, and then he was off the ice. And so, there was so much, you know, I assumed that he was going to get booed at some level in Columbus, you know, it was his decision to leave there basically, but there was an anticipation, and, you know, it was curious what that return was going to be like. So it gave an opportunity. I think Jacob Gelbus may have played regardless, because, you know, Derek King said that Gelbus was in even before the Seth Jones news, and I think Ian Mitchell might have been the healthy scratch. But Jacob Gelbus got a chance, and a lot of guys played a lot of minutes, and Stillman played pretty well, and DeHaan and Murphy stepped up their game. And, the Blue Jackets had 26 shots, the Blackhawks 20 shots on goal, so it wasn't exactly an offensive game, but the Blackhawks won, and they pulled two out of three of that trip, especially when the Coyotes was an awful loss, and then you had the losing streak on top of that for them. The close out that trip with those two wins, I think, was at least a positive, positive for them.
You know, I have access on the mind because I was listening to Richard Deitch's podcast with Mike Russo and Fudo Shinzawa and Emily Kaplan and Michael Farber this morning on my way to the rink. So it's the little things that I miss. Now, not just the stories, but like I would in any other time, I would have walked up to Gelbus and I would have said, do you want it to be Jakob or do you want it to be Jacob?
Yeah.
Because on the broadcast, they're calling him Jakob. I heard some people calling him Jacob. I've heard both Jakob and Jacob now since training camp. I don't know the answer. I want to ask him, when am I going to get a chance to ask? I'm not, if we're on a Zoom call, I'm not going to waste one of my question and my follow-up on that question. So it's little things like this. Like I remember like Richard Ponick, when he first came in, the very first thing I asked him was, how do you pronounce your last name? And he told me it was Panik, where it's Pa, but the emphasis was on the neek, on the second part. He goes, it's really hard for American people to say, but I felt like I'd gotten it down. And then the next year he came in, and it was Richard Panik all of a sudden. And I asked him why, because again, these are the things you can ask in an open locker room. I go Richard, why is everyone calling you Richard Panik? And he goes, I got tired of everyone saying it wrong, so I just kind of went with it, which just cracked me up, because Nicholas Hjalmarsson did the same thing. His real name is Nicholas Hjalmarsson, but every single American pronounced it wrong, so he just said, fuck it, I'm Nicholas Hjalmarsson now.
I do think it is Jacob. I think I misspoke there, because I know
you're not.
I listen to the Ice Hogs. Listen to Ice Hogs games that Joey Z is always. It's a Jakob there too. So I think it's one of those words like you tend to like, oh, it's pronounced this way.
It's got a J, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it is Jakob.
Anyway, but that's the little things like that are one of the things I miss about being in the locker room. It's just getting clarification on either a play, a coaching decision, or someone's pronunciation of their name. Yeah, little things like that I miss. I was on the Arizona and Vegas leg of this trip. I don't know how you got stuck with Columbus. I feel like a jerk for that, but going out west.
I think that was my decision. So it was.
I had 65 and sunny both days, and you went to Columbus. Drove to Columbus, no less. But
I did have your sandwich that you like. So
the pot roast sandwich.
I did have it for lunch.
That's worth going to Columbus. Like I legitimately look forward to going to Columbus just for that.
Hedger, I called Hedger, who unfortunately had COVID. So we couldn't get together, but I asked him, I'm like, oh, there's my hotel. Where should I go eat? And then he appointed me within a few blocks to,
it's legit. Pop. It's legit.
Yeah. I've been there before, so I know that, but it was a good lunch. So.
But anyway, so the trip starts in Arizona and they just completely hit rock bottom with that loss to the Coyotes. I mean, the Coyotes, not only are they bad, they are actively efforting to be one of the worst teams we've ever seen. And now they're going to trade Jacob Chychrun, who's signed for like three more years at a good deal and is like a Norris caliber defenseman. And just like, the hell with it. We're going to trade him too. I mean, it's so bad there. And to lose there by multiple goals to a team that had never even held a 2-goal lead at any point this season, a staggering statistic. It just felt like rock bottom. They're like, it was over. Like there's nothing you could do. And then they turn around and they beat Vegas, which is kind of, typical hockey shit right there, where it's like nothing makes sense. And then they go to Columbus and they're missing two of their top three defensemen, arguably, in Jake McCabe and Seth Jones, and they go out and they win. And I know Columbus isn't world beaters, but they went and played a good, solid defensive game with a guy making his NHL debut playing 24 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, and then all of a sudden you're on the upswing again, and here comes Lucas Reichel.
Think of all the prospects that we've covered that would have, like, died for those minutes, you know?
Oh,
like, the Spencer Abbotts who played one game for, like, 5 minutes, you know?
Or Spencer Abbott started on the top line, though. I think we were in
one game.
I want to say it was in Detroit because I'm picturing the bowels of Joe Louis Arena in my head talking to him.
He played one game and never saw an NHL
I think it was Detroit. If it is Detroit, I should get a prize for remembering that. But it's just amazing how, like, when you have a team that's mediocre to bad, how quickly things can change and how quickly the mood. Like, you win two games in a row, and here comes Lucas Reichel, and there's something to be excited about. And all of a sudden, it's like, all right, yeah, I look forward to that game on Thursday against Montreal, a terrible team. Maybe they win three in a row. Maybe they hadn't won. They had not won consecutive games since Derek King's first four games, which was 2 months ago now.
Yeah.
It was always loss, win, loss, loss, win, win, loss. You know, just some overtime losses in there. They just hadn't strung anything together. And, you know, I feel silly every time I even say the word playoffs about this team, but if they were going to make some kind of miracle run, you have to be looking at a 7-8-9 game winning streak, kind of like what Vancouver did when Bruce Boudreau came in, just to even be sniffing it, just to be even on the periphery of the playoff picture. So, you know, it has to start somewhere, right? So maybe it started with a terrible loss in Arizona and you turn around and, you know, you beat Vegas and then and it's on the upswing, or maybe they lose to Montreal tomorrow and we're just all dead again. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to, like, build, you know, like, that narrative is, it's, like, we all probably want to get behind it, because it's, like, it keeps us all, entertained, or at least engaged with it, but yeah, I mean, they have so far to go. Like, they need to string so many wins together, and they need to really rattle off, like, you know, 9 out of 10 here or something, and there's a lot of games left,
We have no idea what those games are yet, because we don't know what February is going
to
look like.
It'd be nice to know what the February schedule is at some point. But part of it, and I guess this is kind of a segue into Lucas Reichel stuff too, is that there's so many games left, and they've made a little bit more of a clarification what the plan is. And you and I wrote about this in detail a couple days ago. And one of my points is there are so many games left of the season that the design, the plan, to stick with it. Because he may come in tomorrow, like he's gonna be given an opportunity when he was on the line with what
he's Kane centering was. Patrick Kane and Dylan Strome.
Like he just may like if he has like three or four assists or whatever. Like what?
Yeah, what if Patrick Kane finally scores goals with Lucas Reichel? Kane hasn't scored in 13 games. What if Lucas Reichel's the trigger? You think Patrick Kane's gonna be like, yeah, you can send him back to Rockford now?
You know, I was talking to someone just the other day about Kane, and I asked about the supposed hip injury and what he's going through and whether that's led, you know, his shot problems and, you know, him lack of scoring. And the person, you know, who's pretty familiar with the game, like he's like, no, it's more about getting shots off of passes, you know, that so much of Kane does is such a, what he's had to do lately is you know, create his own shot and you know, it's a puck off of his own stick, and that there's really no one creating for him. So you see Kane, like, just maybe not forcing a lot, but there's a lot more like not open nets that he sometimes would see. And I think maybe the right center or the right combination would fix that. Cause obviously Kane was creating for DeBrincat, and I think DeBrincat was creating for Kane a little bit, but there just hasn't been that combination. And the fact they've moved along, the lines along so much that there hasn't been that cohesiveness. So I don't know if Reichel, you know, who knows? I mean, Saad clicked with Hossa and Taves, and you know, coming into Strome and Kane, you know, that's I'm sure they'll get a lot of offensive zone starts and a lot of favorable matchups. So, you know, they're going to put Reichel in the most positive situation. But to say that, well, we're going to put him, give him a couple games and send him back to Rockford, and he's going to spend most of the year in Rockford, just I don't know, it seems it's hard to, you know, predict that sort of
thing. Yeah, I asked Derek King directly. I mean, because he said that was the plan. Give him a few games, almost like a reward. Give him a taste of the NHL and then send him back to Rockford basically for the rest of the year. The team
they're burning that year.
The team obviously wants to keep him on 9 games or fewer this year. But I asked him, like, what if he's just fantastic? I mean, how do you send him back down? And King kind of said, that's the plan. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And I think everybody in the organization knows where they are, understands the overall situation, and knows that they're better served by not burning that year of his contract. But it'll be really interesting because, again, if he's the trigger for Kane and Kane gets hot, and this is all conjecture and if stuff, but it's you know, Kane said today, just it is what we do. And Kane said today, you know, just you know, one practice playing with him said he's got that speed through the middle I like. You know, he talked about that with Nick Schmaltz when that was his center. He likes guys who can just barrel up the ice with some speed because that's the game he wants to play. If Lucas Reichel gets Patrick Kane rolling here, you're going to have a hard time looking Kane in the eye and saying, okay, Kirby, Dodger center again, because it hasn't been working with that. As for Kane's injury, he insisted today that it's not really prohibiting him from doing anything on the ice. He doesn't think he's lost a step. He doesn't think that, you know, Ben Pope of the Sun-Times asked him, like, look, you've been kind of caught from behind on a couple of breakaways here. Is that a sign that your hip is? Because, no, you know, sometimes you're just starting from a standstill and you don't have the same edge. And he kind of explained it away. Now, he's always been, he's like Taves that way, where he's never going to really admit something he's not going to use it as an excuse. It's just not the way he's wired to talk.
I feel like he's got like he's shown bursts of speed at times where it's like, yeah, he's like he gets away from people still too.
It should be pointed out, he is playing at a point a game. He's got 7 goals and hasn't scored in 3. He has got like 7 assists in his last 4 or 5 games. I mean, he's just here, Alex, go score some goals.
And but for him to have 7 goals is
just, it's mind blowing. And you go back to last year, he only had what, like 3 over the second half of the season. So he's got like 10 goals in like 70 games here. I haven't done the math on that. Check that. But it's in that ballpark. It's kind of hard to believe. I mean, he always thinks of himself as a playmaker before score, but this is a big-time goal scorer in the NHL who's going to have 500 or 600 goals in his career. And it's kind of amazing how few he's gotten this year.
Yeah.
And problematic.
Yeah, it's just it's funny because, I mean, they've won these last few games because of like Murphy scores to Hahn. Yeah. And, yeah, like it's just
Riley Stillman, Jujhar Khaira.
They could have used that earlier in the season. But yeah, no, it'll be interesting. And a lot of these points are in the story we wrote, so please go read that. But I also wonder, like, if he's excelling, if Reichel's excelling in Rockford, and he does already in the NHL, like, I know that they want, like, it's best in the Blackhawks' interest, and I know that just debating people on Twitter, this, that, you know, like, I understand, like, overall,
even the fan base seems to want him to stay in Rockford.
Yeah, like, I don't know, maybe just it's my hockey sensibilities that you want someone to, like, suppress someone, I think, you know, just because they may be too good now and may cost you too much later, and I get that, smart business, and the Blackhawks have probably, you know, Stan Bowman's bad contracts have made people think this way or think a certain way about development where they probably messed up with Boqvist and Doc, and you want to get this right. But I think Reichel, based on everything so far, is that he's ready, and he's probably closer, not that he's the Brinket, but he's closer to that develop model than Doc was, even where I think Reichel, they took the necessary steps too, like for him to stay in Germany, like he played in the top division an extra year, he really excelled there, you know, like he's played in I'd say Germany's top division is not that far off from the AHL in some ways, like there are a lot of former AHL players, obviously you're playing on a different ice surface, but then you know, like you've given him 20 games in the AHL, and again, I mean, and he may not be ready. Like, I have no idea. I just
He might be terrible tomorrow.
I don't. And I guess that's the other point. Is
he's playing center in the NHL for the first time in his life?
We'll see. So, like, yeah, I mean, he may be, but it's I feel like for them to already have like a set plan is just doesn't.
Well,
I know why they have a set plan, but I also don't agree with it.
I think it's good to have a plan. I think the plan is the correct plan. But yes, I do agree that you have to be willing to have some flexibility with it. Like you said, Brandon Saad's a perfect example. They had no intention of Brandon Saad being in that lineup every day in 2013. And Daniel Carcillo blew out his knee the first game in LA. Saad comes into the lineup and never left until he was traded. So, I mean, if Lucas Reichel turns into that kind of player, you're going to have a hard time sending him back to Rockford. It's going to piss him off. It's going to piss Patrick Kane off. It's going to piss some of the fan base off. And, you know, this team hasn't exactly built up a lot of goodwill.
The fan base is, like, on board with, like...
But, well, we know how quickly that changed. The guy comes in, and he's just fantastic and fun to watch. And, you know, all of a sudden, the Blackhawks are interesting again. And you're not going to necessarily be happy that you're spending all that money for a ticket to go see, you know...
Yeah.
Some other guy.
I'm going to be the Rockford IceHogs beat writer for the second half of the season.
Number one center, Henrik Borgstrom. That has not... I mean, what are we even doing here? So, it's interesting that they've made Reichel the center, too, because when he was drafted, he was a left wing. Like, that was the idea, was that maybe he could play some center, but they were drafting with the idea of being a winger. But once he got to Rockford, they really, like, and I think his second year in Germany, they wanted to see him.
I think that's what really kind of set that course, like, is that he was so good at it in that second year in Germany.
And like, that made him that much more valuable because, you know, if you're a center with his talent, maybe you don't go number 17. Maybe you go number 9, 10, 11. It makes that much of a difference. So, you know, the Blackhawks really think they've got somebody here, which at number 17 is no short thing. And Christ, it better be, because they don't really have any other forward prospects. You go back, go look at, Scott Wheeler and Corey Promen and all their prospect rankings. Man, it's just barren. They have like 150 defensemen prospects that all could, you know, Galvis is a perfect example, a guy you don't even think of, and he steps in. They've got a lot of serviceable NHL defensemen, if maybe not top guys. What they don't have is any forwards. So yeah. they desperately need Reichel to be that guy, because they're not getting one this year either.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I think the forward depth pool is best. It's Reichel, and then beyond him is Colton Dock, who's been, you know, and then I think Artur Kayumov still from Russia, if he comes over, like he's probably a serviceable, you know,
Max Lunov,
bottom six guy. Because the problem is that they've also like for guys like Graham Knott to, you know, the pan out, and you know we've gone through this before, but like Nicholas Nordgren, who's like a third rounder, or Jake Wise. Third riser. You know, it's helped that Kurashev's been better, like, a decent hit on a fourth rounder, but they don't have, like, Kurashev's not, like, he's probably not going to ever be a point of game guy or something like that. Like, he'd be a nice top nine, bottom six guy, you know? So, certainly they need, I to not have that first round pick again is just, it's going to hurt them, because they could really, I'm curious to see what Kyle Davidson. You know, Stan Bowman was so aggressive with the Europeans. Like, the Blackhawks have the roster that whoever, you know, like I started asking Corey Pronham for some names the other day about just whoever the top European players are, and it's really hard to come by the premier and light types, but if you can get someone that's Kubalik or Cahoon, like I think you have something to sell right now, especially a forward. Like you can step in and we're going to give you ice time. We're going to give you an opportunity.
So. And there's a track record too. I mean, guys that have come to Chicago and succeeded.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I'm curious how to see how that plays out this spring. Right. Like I was surprised that I think a lot of people were skeptical of Reichel when they drafted him. Like a lot of people didn't think he would go right where he did. And then he excelled in Germany, especially, last year he was better than I thought. I remember watching, you know, kind of doing like a shift by shift in a couple of his games in Berlin, and it was just like, wow, he's really taken this step, and analytics were really good. And then you see him over here, and you saw him on the smaller ice and in Traverse City, or not in Traverse City, and when they played Minnesota in that rookie tournament, you could see that there was something there. And then for Derek King to even say earlier in the season when he was still in Rockford, saying that, you know, we haven't seen this type of offensive talent come through Rockford. Like it was pretty telling that even the organization understood that that he has a chance to be special.
I will preach some skepticism here. Just the Blackhawks fans have been burned by elite prospect types before. I mean, Dylan Sekura, I can remember Stan Bowman talking at a draft going, you know, we don't need to make a big free agent acquisition. Dylan Sekura is going to be our big acquisition. And it's like, that didn't happen. And Ian Mitchell was going to step in and be a top pairing defenseman. And that really hasn't happened yet. And, you know, I would understand and I would say that's a good idea to come in here with some skepticism, you know, cautious optimism. We're all excited to see what the kid can do, but he is 19 years old.
Yeah. I guess having gone through this, and Sekura was one that I certainly watched Sekura play a lot in college, and what I didn't understand then was that how much he struggled to go inside, you know, like how how much of his disability and, you know, just the, and then he was better than a lot of college players, that it wasn't able to translate at the NHL level. And it's still translating at the American League level, where I think him and Reichel are both, you know, the top 20 in points, and they both have similar goals and assists, and Secura just hasn't been able to translate that. With Reichel, yeah, I don't know. I guess with Reichel, like, I feel like the fact that he's doing it at the AHL level, and, you know, it's, they have a 4-point game, and I know someone said that they played some weak competition this past week, but the last time the Ice Hawks player had a 4-point game was Spencer Abbott. I think that was in 2015.
Two Spencer Abbott references in one podcast.
Yeah, like, but I'm just saying, for a 19-year-old kid to put up the numbers that he has at a point a game, I think there's something there. And yeah, there should be some, you know, like, it just hold off from handing him a crown. But I do think that he's beyond just the hype at this point. Like, there's enough of a sample size, and especially on even the smaller ice, and to do it in Rockford, I think there is some benefit to saying that he's probably further along to secure some of the prospects that have come through.
So give us, you've watched more of him than I have. I kind of leave the prospects up to you because it's your baby and you love it, and I'm more than happy to do that. Give us an idea of his game. Like what kind of player is he? Is he a pure skill guy? Is he, you know, maybe got a little more compete in the corners than people think? What kind of player is he?
Yeah, I found that he's a lot more skillful than I thought. Like, I thought he was more of like the grinding, you know, like. I understand when they drafted him, like, he was a lot of intelligence and speed, but there's a lot of skill there, and he's really good at just carrying the puck through defenders, and I think he's going to help the Blackhawks with, you know, entries and exits, and then he sees the ice really well, and I think his development's taken a really big step. Like, he comes from a hockey family where his uncle played in the NHL and his dad played, and certainly thinks of the game, but, like, Berlin was the perfect development ground for him, where you know, like, they, every game, like, he was coached, I'm blanking on the name right now, but he, you know, coached by a former NHLer, you know, and they went through every shift, and you know, they worked them, like, they eased them in, like, the German top division is a pretty tough league, and they eased them in their first year, and he surprised them by even making the team and gave him more and more, and they went through his shifts and just really and they became this, you know, he became that number one center last year, and just gave him more and more, and you know, I think they've made sure that he's a, you know, a two-way player, so the defensive side and back checking, and I know they focus on that too. Like, there's benefits to him starting the year, and you know, it helped the Blackhawks, they had so many players on the roster to begin training camp, that it helped that Reichel didn't, like, you know, just have some kind of, you know, like, having this amazing training camp where they could send him to Rockford, and made a lot of sense. And I think he's benefited from that too. Like, he's adapted. He's, you know, like, I think he's learned how to be a better two-way player. And sometimes playing with NHL players, like, sometimes brings more out of skilled players. Like, he may, you know, playing with a Kane, you know, if he can understand how to play with Kane and do the things that Kane needs, like, someone like Reichel may flourish because there is skill in the way he thinks the game, and he's creative. So, you know, I guess sometimes the young kids too, like, you don't see as many of the issues, you know, and I'm sure there's going to be ones, like, you know, like, he's still 19 and he is, like, he's not coming in being Connor McDavid, but I think there are a lot of upsides to being that two-way center, and with the speed he has and the way that he controls the puck, and there are a lot of things to like about his game. So, you know, this will be the next challenge for him to see where he measures this level, but he's been pretty good, whether it's been in the German top division or even in the AHL now, where his game's translated pretty well.
All right. On the COVID front, obviously Jones being in protocol doesn't help, in McCabe too. But at least the schedule is a little bit loose here. You got Montreal and Anaheim home coming up, then the trip to Seattle, then three games off because the Edmonton game was postponed. You hope that those guys will be back in the lineup and kind of ramp back up in time for that home against Minnesota. You know, God, I remember the days when Minnesota were the little brother in that relationship. That's a good, good hockey team. And it looks like Kirill Kaprizov's on his way back. So that's going to be an interesting battle there until we get into the kind of unknown of what February is going to look like. I mean, the Blackhawks are lucky in that the majority of the games they've had postponed were home games. So that's good for them. It's good for us, too, because we don't have to book flights at the very last second and pay top dollar to get them. But we really have no idea just how jam-packed that February is going to look. But, you know.
What Edmonton was the road game? Was that the Red
Edmonton? Edmonton was the road game. Yeah, that one that's supposed to be next week. I think I honestly, I can't even keep track at this point. Like, I'm barely looking a week ahead. It was funny. Riley Stillman today said, we were talking about COVID, and he goes, you never know when the axe is going to fall on you. It's like the guys are just waiting around to get pulled off the ice like Seth Jones was. And it's kind of, that's where we're at with even covering this team. It's just like, you never know when that game's going to get the axe fall on us. So we'll just kind of, let's look a couple days ahead. You and I, we're not big planners to begin with, but oh my God, we're really not planning these days, because there's just, you just don't know what the next week is going to look like right now.
Yeah, I was thinking about it today, like how many players, like it's gone through much of the team, like at different points.
But that first wave was in October. That's more than 3 months ago now.
Yeah,
like Patrick Kane missed a bunch of time in, like, I think that was late October. Yeah. So, you know, that's, you know, November, December, January, we're coming up on the end of that, you know, 90-day window where they don't have to test. So those guys are going to have to start testing very soon. And, you know, it's a different variant and very transmissible, and it's entirely possible that those guys get back on COVID protocol before the season is out. I think Dr. Fauci said it's going to come for us all.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, I mean, you had more kind of prevalent, prominent symptoms, and I wonder if I had it. You know, like
I had a headache. It really just, that was it. Yeah, maybe a little shortness of breath when I tried to work out for a week or so afterwards. But it doesn't matter if you have it; you're not playing. So.
Yeah, no, I wonder, like, the fact that they're testing, like, I think so many of us, especially if, you know, if we've had the two boosters now, like, I just wonder how many of us have, and we just don't know, or, you know, like, that's it. Seth Jones was on the ice yesterday skating fine, and then you're just like, oh, yeah, you tested positive. I mean, that's just
And you go back to Jonathan Toews last, you know, he said he thinks when he got it was before we even knew about it. Like, it was, hadn't even, you know, come to America as far as we were aware yet. But it turns out that, in late February, a lot of people were getting sick. And, you know, so you just don't know. It's hard to know for sure when you're sick and when you're not. Everyone reacts differently.
Tomorrow's game, aside from Reichel's debut, is Andrew Shaw's legacy night. And against his old team in the Canadiens too, makes it a little bit more significant. And we actually have a fun piece that we started on when he announced his retirement last year. And never really kind of finished it, and we were like, oh, we'll hold it for, you know, rainy day, and it worked out this way. So we've actually added to it, and we got a fun story about Andrew Shaw tomorrow. And I'm sure we talked a lot of this about Shaw when he first announced, and I don't know, what for you, what are the lasting memories of Andrew Shaw's legacy with the Blackhawks?
It's really just his voice bouncing around the locker room, right? I mean, he was just so, it's funny because everybody thinks of Shaw, oh, what a great, colorful character to cover. He's a terrible quote. Like, throughout his career, he was a terrible quote because you put a microphone in front of his face and a camera, you get him in a scrum setting, and he would just kind of lock down and just, nobody spouted more cliches than Andrew. Every single quote was, you know, we just got to go out there and play for each other. That was his thing. Got to go out there and play for each other. But then, like, when you stop rolling and you just bullshitted with the guy, I mean, you can see why everybody loved playing with him. He's funny. He's loud. He's obnoxious. I mean, I'm loud and obnoxious, so I have an appreciation for people like that. And he just, you know, you hear it time and again that, you know, from his teammates is, you need someone in that room that can keep things light, because these guys take their work very seriously. Hockey players are an incredibly self-serious bunch. Like, this is not a loose sport. This is a bunch of guys that take every shift home with them and stew on it and, you know, grind their molars to powder thinking about these games. You need someone in there. Robin Leonard was like that last year, or like 2 years ago. I don't even know where the time is anymore. But, you know, you need a guy in that room that's just bombastic and loud and silly and, you know, just chirping guys and loosening things up, because these guys need that. They need someone to force them into laughing every now and then. And Andrew Shaw, I mean, never mind that he was a pretty good hockey player, a twice undrafted guy who turned into a 20 goal scorer and a big time playoff performer who always seemed to come through in the clutch. Just his everyday presence in that room made the Blackhawks a better team, a tighter team, a looser team, all the things you need during those, you know, really tense, excruciating playoff runs. And even like right now, like these Blackhawks in October and November needed an Andrew Shaw in that room, because you need someone to break that tension. These were not happy players for a long time, and they shouldn't have been, but you sometimes just need some kind of jackassy screwball in there just to keep everyone on their toes. And that's really the legacy Andrew Shaw has, is his personality as much as his play on the ice.
I think one of the pieces I really enjoyed that you wrote about him was about how he grew up on a farm and
shoveling chicken shit.
Yeah, that was he's got to know. And it's cool, during the story we did yesterday, I talked to Brandon Saad, and he was his roommate for early in their careers, and inside kind of shared what, you know, what that was like and what Shaw was like kind of away from the room. And so, yeah, it was kind of, you know, like we got a lot of different perspectives on Shaw for our story tomorrow and different sides of him. But it was, I think everyone who was around him, like I think Saad put it out, you know, put it that there was always a laugh, you know, like it, yeah. Just he made everything lighter. And then the fact that he was a good player, like it was like you could live with some of his annoyingness too, you know, like it. I think the
wouldn't fly if he was like, you know, minus 30 and had 3 assists all year.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, I think the room would be different. So. So I'm sure that'll be, I'm sure.
Fans, yeah, it's funny. He's like the perfect, like he's the example you go to, you know, when all the cliches about, you know, if you work hard enough, like, look, I was never going to be a professional athlete. No matter how hard I worked, I didn't have that inherent coordination and ability and strength and skill and body type and all that stuff. But there is something to be said that if you do have some of that and you just refuse to, you know, listen to what people are saying. He went undrafted twice. He was all set to not play in the NHL. Everyone told him to give it up, that he wasn't good enough to play in it. And yet, you know, he gets called up I think it was the 2012 season, and just he scores in his first game. He's immediately just picking fights with like Hal Gill. Guys are 6'7", 300 pounds, just going nuts on people because he just didn't give a shit what you thought about him. He knew what he could do, and he was going to do it whether you liked it or not. And, you know, he's such a testament to dedication to just, you know, persevering through, you know, how difficult it is to get to the NHL and B, how difficult it is to stay in the NHL. Every time I talked to him about that, he said, the thing I took from my time getting into the NHL was that I can never stop that. I have to be that player all the time. And you think of like a Brandon Hagel, I think he's the player people most associate as an Andrew Shaw type because he's an effort guy. And he's in that vein. Like I remember we did what the scouts are saying piece last year. And one of the scouts told me Brandon Hagel's a great player as long as he is 100% hair on fire all the time. The second he lets up, he's an AHL guy. And Shaw was that type. And Shaw showed that you can do it for 10 years, that you can play that way nonstop all the time for 10 years and put together a really good NHL career, win a couple of Stanley Cups, make tens of millions of dollars. I mean, he's really... You know, you don't think of Andrew Shaw as a model citizen slash player slash the, you know, the stereo, the archetype, but he's the kind of guy that young hockey players should look to and say, you know, that's how I got to play the game.
Yeah, I think his career is also like this cautionary tale. Like it's you know, like it's. Like the Hagel isn't Shaw in that respect, where he's not that physical type player, and I think as much as Shaw wanted to get away from certain aspects of the game, like that's what made him, and it was impossible to get away from him, and ultimately why he had to step away, you know, as of now doesn't seem to have any, you know, lasting, you know, I guess we'll see down the road, but maybe hopefully for his sake that he stepped away at the right point, but obviously. The concussions and, you know, some of the stories he told, especially in Montreal, how dark those times were too, where like he paid a price at times for how he played. And, you know, I think he doesn't get enough credit for how athletic he was and, you know, some of the stuff he did, because he was a really nice hockey player. But it was all those other elements that made him, you know, the pest and all those other things that he had to do to. He turned to the stuff that made him get to where he was, and that was it was good and bad, obviously. Like it won him cups and it got him money, but he also he paid that price physically.
It's always a risk reward with him, right? I mean, the way he played, the way he's listed at 5'11", there's no way he's more than 5'9", but he would plant himself in the crease and just take the cross checks at the back of the head and tip pucks and off his shin pads and his stick and all that. You know, he came up and he wasn't wearing a visor, and everybody wears a visor, and the reason he didn't wear a visor was in Rockford, he got into a fight and he was wearing a visor because it was mandatory, and it like his head got bent in a little bit and the visor cut a huge gash in his cheek. And he's like, I'm never wearing a visor again because I can't fight with a visor. And, you know, a few years later, like, so he took a puck to the face. So like trying to tell him to wear a visor, he put the visor on. He's like, I'm going to be responsible from now on. I'm going to do this. And then like 2 days later, he's not wearing a visor anymore. It's just,
it was too uncomfortable.
He couldn't not be Andrew Shaw. He understood the risk. And I think coming back last year, I mean, probably a mistake, probably the wrong decision. But even though he suffered another concussion, I think it's what he needed for closure, and he wanted it. And that's just Andrew Shaw. Like, whether you should or shouldn't, it didn't matter to him. He was going to do it, and damn the risk. And you're right. That it is actually a cautionary tale, is that you need to find that fine line between playing at 100% craziness, but also protecting yourself and not putting yourself in harm's way, because the long-term effects can be lasting. And talking to him today, he said, you know, physically I'm fine, mentally there's some, you know, every now and then there's some, but it's nothing that, you know, he's being a stay-at-home dad now. When the kids are a little older, he wants to get back into hockey somehow, but he's in a good place. He's happy where he is. He feels good. He's 30 years old. I mean, he's only 30. He just turned 30. Yeah. It's crazy to think about these guys, these contemporaries of, you know, like Patrick Kane and stuff are retiring now at 30, 32 years old. But he's in a good place, and I'm happy for him. But yeah, he walked that fine line, and he was on the wrong side of it a lot.
With him coming back like that, the one thing I'm going to remember is just how – Like his spirit around the room. Like, we weren't in the room, but you heard stories. Like, I remember Ian Mitchell saying that he left him, you know, like, it wasn't a picture. It was just like a piece of paper with his autograph saying that you hold this, you know, keep this because it's going to be worth something someday. Like he certainly loved just being around that. And I think for a guy like that, that's got to be especially, like, you hear that a lot from players that, you know, stepping away from the game and not being in the room is probably the hardest part of it. And that's got to be really difficult for a guy who's so active and, yeah, I'm sure his kids are enjoying all that energy and you know, getting that devotion now. And,
oh, man, he must be like peak dad. Like, you know, as a guy who's very dad, like, I'm all dad jokes and dad's like, Andrew Shaw must be like peak dad, like on all the time. It must be exhausting to be his kids. I know it's exhausting to be mine.
Yeah, I might. I need that for my babysitter occasionally, you know. I feel, you know, that and the Reichel, there's certainly things. Tomorrow's game should be interesting for a couple different reasons. And
also, Montreal's terrible, so they might win.
Yeah. And the Blackhawks have three in a row would be something for them. So, we'll be. I guess we'll be back at this again next week. Got a couple games this weekend, and then
you're off to Seattle.
Yeah, I'm off this. Yeah, first time in Seattle.
Go to the MoPop, the Museum of Pop Culture. It's really cool.
Okay, done. It's a quick trip, but it'll be be good to
A one off to a 4.5 hour away city. That's
it's an afternoon game too on Monday. So it's
is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah.
Oh, so, nice. Yeah, 4 o'clock Central Time. Nice.
I think I'm on a red eye back. So yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So all works out. So. Yeah, we'll be back at the with Laz and Powers next week for Mark Lazarus. I am Scott Powers, and we'll talk to you soon. And I know that I can fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me?